For me, the goal is always to kind of help people become self-sufficient. So it's like, okay, you know, I'll get you started, but now you've got to kind of take the ball and run with it. It's up to you. Whereas I think the fitness industry, which I don't even like to consider myself part of, I think they like to create dependencies where they want you to rely on them and keep coming back. That's where the complexity serves them. If it's complex, someone needs to answer the complexity, and that's the guru. Where I'm just trying to say, look, it's really actually pretty simple. So you know what to do now, kind of, now it's up to you. Because I think we all are capable of doing more, you know, at anything, a little better, pushing a little harder, doing a little more. And, you know, it's true for myself, it's true for you, it's true for everybody. And I think, you know, some people maybe don't want to face that reality, but if you push yourself with the basics, one, you can always push yourself a little more. You're never gonna get too good for the basics. You can always take a simple exercise, make it a little bit more difficult. There's a lot of ways to increase the difficulty, so you never outgrow it. I'm Ross Dynamite, and this is the Tom Rowland Podcast.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the show today. I've got one of my favorite trainers in the world. When I say trainer, this guy is, let's just say he wrote the book on it. He wrote the book on intensity in training, a book called Infinite Intensity. And he also wrote the book on how to get a workout in anywhere, at your home, out in in a park, anywhere, never gymless. Never Gymless is a book that had a tremendous amount of impact on me. It helped me to create and do workouts all around the world as I've gone to hotels and just feeling like I don't have to have a gym. I don't need a gym. I can do everything I need to stay in shape by, you know, using old school methods and techniques like push-ups and handstand push-ups and running and sprinting and hill sprints and stairs and all the other things that we've talked about on this. Much of that inspiration comes from Ross Enamite. He's a great dude, and he's with us right now. Ross, how you doing, man?
Good, hanging in there.
All right, man. Long time no see.
I know.
I have an interesting picture I want to show you right here.
Oh, well.
And that one, that is
like 2008, probably.
Yeah, 2008. You came down, tried to film an episode of Saltwater Experience, and we got weathered out. It was not our best shoot, but it was fun to get down there with you and get to know you a little bit.
Definitely.
That was awesome. So, since then, what have you been up to?
Just busy with boxing, you know, working as a boxing coach, and you know, so I still have the website. I think that's where I first met you.
Yeah.
You know, online through the old forums, the old training forums.
I know that thing was awesome. I went back to look at it last night, and the forum's gone.
Yeah, no, I shut it down. Actually, just it was only a couple weeks ago. I just
really
didn't really have time to maintain it. There's only so many things you can kind of keep going at once. So
that forum, I mean, that is something that is, you know, that's like it's kind of like a dinosaur these days, the forums, because I had a forum, kind of inspired by yours, how much back and forth you had between all of the people that were following your books and everything like that. And I thought, well, that'd be pretty cool. So I started one myself, and then it just got overrun with spam. I mean, it just, yeah, was so hard to maintain. Is that one of the things that made you decide to close it down?
Yeah, I mean, partly, but I think just years ago, social media wasn't as prevalent, where now I think people have quite, everyone's on, you know, when they get on their phone, they're on social media. So the forum's relevancy, I don't think, is what it was prior to Facebook and Instagram and Twitter and all these different media forums that you can get in touch with anybody. You don't need to go to a forum. So
yeah, but still though, I mean, you had so much information on there, all those DIY links and everything that you had on there. That stuff was just amazing.
Imagine, I'm going to actually recreate that list. I'll just put it on the blog because I've had a lot of people asking for it, just because there was probably 200 plus homemade equipment ideas on the forum. So I'm going to try to put them on one place on the blog so people can at least access them still.
It was the best. It was the best resource on the internet for sure of homemade equipment stuff. I mean, you had a couple of guys that were really into it and they would make everything. I would love to see what their garage looked like. Cause I mean, you had a couple of really, really avid posters there.
Yeah.
So when I first made contact with you for this, you were in training camp.
Yeah.
And so what camp was that?
I was Katie Taylor. She's the undisputed lightweight female boxing champion. And we were supposed to be initially fighting on May 2nd in England. And second date got pushed back to July 4th. And I'm guessing that's probably going to get pushed back as well. We are still training, but just kind of waiting to hear any day now. It's probably going to be pushed towards the end of July or August. Who knows the way the world's going.
Right. And so with that, we went into lockdown kind of while you were in camp, right?
Yeah, it's just a private gym, so there's only, you know, we're the only ones there. It's right. All the gyms are closed, obviously. So,
yeah.
Well, even the show now, I mean, like, I was talking to John Hackelman a few days ago, and he had a couple of guys on the UFC card that just got canceled, and all this stuff's going to be behind closed doors for now until who knows when they're going to actually be able to have crowds back in, which is terrible. But,
yeah. What do you think about Fight Island?
Yeah. I mean, it'd be unfortunate to lose the atmosphere of the crowd, but I at the same time, you know, you want to have the sport keep going. Fighters need to fight. That's how you get paid ultimately. So, and people who are locked down, they want to have something to watch. So, I mean, I kind of get all aspects, but, you know, it would be a big difference not having a lively crowd there where it's silent in the arena.
Right. I mean, that would be, I mean, I can remember back in my wrestling days when we would go into an empty gym and, you know, there would be no one there except your parents or whatever. And it is a different feeling, you know, or like you see some of the
boxings like that. I mean,
yeah.
You have major tournaments, there's like seven people there. You know,
it's like, right. And it's kind of a weird deal. Like there's no sound. And then, you know, you get slammed to the mat or something and you're kind of like, wow, this is like the real deal. Even though there's this whole other element is missing, you know,
yeah.
Those are some of the most intense matches.
Themselves, you don't really notice it. Once it's on, it's on, but it's just the build up to the fight, publicity, you know, it's like the press conferences, that's all ever gone. You know, it's like, so it loses some of the appeal, I think, to the rest of the world.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I don't know. What do you think is going to have to happen for us to have these events again and feel comfortable with opening things up?
I don't know. You know, it's like, I mean, I don't know if it's in terms of, you know, is there going to be a vaccine or is there going to be, you know, I don't know what it's going to take. I think it's going to take, you know, once it does settle down, the world's still going to need some time before they're comfortable just gathering in right. crowds and groups, you know, whether the virus is here or not, there's still going to be like, oh, I'm not quite sure.
Yeah, I know. It's a weird time. It's such a weird time. I don't think that, I mean, you could say it over and over again. Nobody could have predicted this. Yeah. I mean, this is like, I don't know. You just see some things coming, but you know, I didn't see this coming at all. Not to this level.
And it was quick too. We were in the gym, we were sparring, you know, it was 3 or 4 days before everything kind of got crazy. And it was up, like guys were kind of like not joking, but it was, you know, you didn't really think it was coming. Then 3 days later, like, oh man, the gym's closed. Can't go anywhere. It's just right. And out of nowhere, the whole world shut down.
Right. I know. And it happened super fast. So one of the things that's happened since then is, I know that most equipment manufacturers are completely sold out of dumbbells, of anything that would be of home use. It's just all been sold out because people are needing to train at home, which is one of the most interesting things about talking to you. You're the king of training at home or training anywhere. One of the things that I liked the most about your stuff was the book. So I've got your book right here, Never Gymless. Never Gymless. This is probably one of the best books I've ever read on how to exercise and get your workout in outside of a gym. His other book is Infinite Intensity, which is right here. And both of these books I've talked about a number of times on the podcast because they are really a huge reason that I went down the path to fitness that I went down, and really mostly thanks to you. But what was the inspiration for writing those books back in 2006?
I don't know. I think probably in both cases, it was just to kind of fulfill a need of, you know, those who might not have access to all the resources that they either want or think that they need. Coming up as a boxer, I grew up in gyms where we really didn't have anything. I mean, at one point I was in a gym, which was the basement of a housing project. We didn't even have a ring. It was just a crude basement, and everybody there could fight. Everybody was in shape.
Right.
You can do a lot. I think a lot of the world doesn't know that. Maybe they're starting to realize it now that everybody's kind of forced to be a little bit more creative and make the most of what they have, because you really don't need anything. The equipment manufacturers don't want you to know that. I mean, you know, a lot of the fitness gurus, whatever you want to call it, they don't want you to know it because they want you to kind of rely on them having the answers to all the complexities. But the reality is that most people that, if you grew up wrestling or boxing or martial arts, you did pretty well without too much.
Right.
And
almost nothing, you know, and that's one of the funniest things about the success that you've had. Is like, if you really read through, I mean, you have some incredible information in here, obviously, that came from a lot of study and stuff, but the majority of it is that message. You don't need anything. I'm not trying to sell you anything. You don't need anything. You don't have to look for the newest exercise. You can look back into the past, to history, and get everything that you need. And you've had a tremendous amount of success not selling anything, basically.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like I always say, if you find someone, if you know anybody who's done throughout their life on a pull up, dips, squats, lunges, maybe they run some hills, skip some rope, they're probably in better shape than most of the world, you know, and that's with nothing.
Right.
And, you know, and you can't argue with that. You know, there's no argument against it. All the fancy, even some of the home workout stuff I'm seeing now, it's like, people are trying too hard almost to make stuff up. You know, some of this like choreographed crazy stuff where it's like, just maybe drop down and bang push-ups, you know, it's like bang out some pull-ups or dips and you're going to be better than most.
Right. Right. So what's your story? Like you're working out in boxing gyms at the bottom of homeless shelters and not homeless shelters, but what did you say?
Housing projects.
So take me from there to you know, how that ended up where you are now.
Well, I mean, my aspiration, I came up as a fighter, you know, and I was a successful amateur, and I had a lot of hand injuries that, you know, partly from boxing, but, you know, as a teenager, I was a bit of a knucklehead, and, you know, I had some issues outside the ring, but I broke my right hand 4 times, and eventually, every time I kept trying to come back to fight, I was having hand injuries, which eventually is what kind of transitioned me from fighter to coach. So at the time, I started working with some of the amateur kids in the gym. And then eventually from there, just being around the gym, eventually progressed to working with the pros and to eventually now. That's pretty much all I do now is work with the pros as a boxing coach.
Yeah, but somewhere along the line, you got a pretty good education.
Yeah, no, I mean, I went to school. Yeah, I mean, it's like, you know, I went to UConn. I mean, I went through the educational side of things. And I think that's where, even from a training standpoint, like, I kind of know both ends. You know, like, I studied, you know, all the journals and the research. And at one point, it was almost like thinking, okay, maybe I need to get a little more scientific with the training. You know, but eventually, I kind of realized, I went back to my roots that, you know, it really isn't that complicated. I've tried everything. You know, I've done the weights, the odd objects, the body weight, a combination of everything. And at the end of the day, you know, as much as we want to try to make it out to be more sophisticated than it is, it's really not. You know, it's like if you have a work ethic like a Dan Gable, you're going to probably do better than 99% of people out there.
Right.
You know, so and even as a coach, I mean, obviously I've been fortunate to work with some world class fighters. But when you actually outside the talent and the skill from the actual physical training, I mean, it's pretty simple. We bust our ass, but the work itself is pretty simple. I think a lot of people maybe don't realize that on the outside. They're kind of like, oh, what's the secret here? It's got to be something more fancy than that, and when it's really not.
Yeah. I mean, everybody's looking for the secret. Also, in the secret in just overall health in the outside world, like not as a professional athlete, not even as necessarily a competitive athlete, but just somebody that has kind of lost it a little bit and wants to get back in shape or to get in shape for the first time of their life. Like, what's the secret? Who do I need to pay? What do I need to do?
Yeah.
And, you know, there is a learning curve there where some people they don't know how to do a push-up or a pull-up or anything. They've never been an athlete at all. But for the most part, that's where your books are really incredible.
But I think at the same time, I think for me, the goal is always to kind of help people become self-sufficient. So it's like, okay, you know, I'll get you started, but now you've got to kind of take the ball and run with it. It's up to you. Whereas I think the fitness industry, which I don't even like to consider myself part of, I think they like to create dependencies where they want you to rely on them and keep coming back. That's where the complexity serves them. Because if it's complex, someone needs to answer the complexity, and that's the guru. Where I'm just trying to say, look, it's really actually pretty simple. So you know what to do now, kind of now it's up to you. Because I think we all are capable of doing more. You know, at anything, a little better, pushing a little harder, doing a little more. And, you know, it's true for myself. It's true for you. It's true for everybody. And I think, you know, some people maybe don't want to face that reality, but if you push yourself with the basics, one, you can always push yourself a little more. You're never going to get too good for the basics. You can always take a simple exercise, make it a little bit more difficult. There's a lot of ways to increase the difficulty. So you never outgrow it.
Right.
You know, it's not probably the best sales pitch, but you know, it's not. That's why I got into it. So,
yeah. So what, I mean, the interesting thing right now is that you take a business model like, you know, the Globo Gym type model where you can create this complexity. You really need this trainer. This equipment is dangerous. You really need somebody to hold your hand through this deal. And we're here for you. And we're going to run a New Year's special and we're going to sell way more than we could possibly ever host in this location. But we're expecting 90% of you not to show up in a month. Right. So that's the model. Right.
Yeah.
And so now in that, and it's worked very well for them because they build these huge gyms all over the place. There's got to be a lot of money coming in. But now that, I mean, that was one of the first targets of this shutdown was where, you know, like where do people gather? Where do they breathe on one another? And
sweat.
Yeah. It's like gyms were almost immediately targeted, like, okay, close down all gyms, close down all massage places, close down all acupuncturists, close down, you know, all of that type of stuff. Do you see that, I mean, in just your opinion, I don't know. I mean, you're not an expert in that type of business, but just as a person that likes to train, what do you think is going to happen with big gyms?
I don't know. I mean, there'll always be, I think, there's certain guys, and there's always going to be a business for certain people. I mean, it's almost a social hour for them as much as it's the training. Yeah. So I think, you know, it's just part of the daily routine. So there'll always be someone that's going to go to a commercial gym. But at the same time, I think there's a lot of people that might be saying like, hey, well, I don't know. Do I really need it? Because, you know, especially it's not just the work at the gym, but it's like, you know, maybe you're driving 20 minutes after work, you're stuck in traffic coming back, where maybe I don't need to waste that time. Maybe I actually could do something at home because they've kind of been forced to now. So it'll be interesting to see where the world goes. I mean, I think the world's going to change in a lot of ways, not just the gyms. you know, just between schooling. I mean, there's a lot of changes that are going to kind of happen just because of this.
Yeah, no, I'm wondering about school already. I mean, my boys are in college in Montana, Montana State. Both of them are home. My daughter's in 11th grade. And I'm wondering if she's going to go back next fall. I mean, really,
for the year, I'm assuming, right?
Oh yeah, both of them have just said we're virtual for the rest of the year, and they said that maybe 3 weeks ago. I mean, there was a slight little kind of hope that maybe they would go back sometime this spring, but there's just no way. You know, they're just not going to do it. Nobody understands how to deal with this thing or what's the right thing. And I keep asking all my friends, like, what do you think that one piece of information is that comes out that kind of breaks things open a little bit? I don't know. I mean, like, I've kind of thought, well, you know, as far as parks go or something like that, what if some research came out that the coronavirus was killed in ultraviolet sunlight in 10 minutes, like, or something like that? You know, I don't know. I mean, just wouldn't that help to open some things, some outdoor things back up and make people feel a little bit, you know, better? And I'm sure the testing and all of that is going to be something, but I don't know. It's such a weird time, and anything that we say right now, even next week, could be like. Did you hear what he said? I mean,
so you wonder, like, have more. I mean, obviously the testing is limited, so you don't know how many people have actually really had it. Maybe they didn't show symptoms, so you know, maybe as far as like fatality rates are a lot lower than you even think, because there's people walking around who've had it and didn't even know. So we don't know. Nobody knows.
I tell you what, man, I have a number of friends that feel like they had it back in December. I mean,
that's like, what I as well. Yeah.
I mean, like you're hearing like, okay, dry cough, you know, really just felt like this certain way.
Weeks, you know, coughing and flu. They don't know what it was.
Yeah. Right. And I have one friend, he went to the doctor, got tested for the flu. No, you don't have the flu. We don't know what this is. Like, I'm sorry, you don't feel good. You're probably just working too hard. You know, just take a little break. And he lived in his basement away from his family for like 13 days. And that was back in December. And he says, man, it's exactly what they're saying. The symptoms are right now. He was very sick. Other people aren't getting sick at all. Like, I don't know. I don't even know. Like, I had another guy on, Lane Norton. He's like a scientist guy. You know him, Bio Lane. You've probably seen him on the internet. We were talking about immune system and strengthening the immune system. And, you know, his feeling was it's always beneficial to have a good immune system, but we just don't know like what's up with this thing. Like, you could. And then he talked about the Spanish flu. You probably know a little bit about the history of the Spanish flu, but he was explaining it to where the Spanish flu actually took out strong, healthy, young men, like more so than anyone else, because it had this weird, inflammatory response that really got like athletic people, like, took them down. So I don't know. You never know what's going on with it.
Whereas this, I mean, seems to be that, you know, it's more of people who've had immune issues, elderly. So, I mean, but again, I've also heard of some athletes that, you know, in their 30s that are getting crushed. So it's like, I mean, I think it's not the common side, but there's been people that you can't really, you know, weren't supposed to be the ideal case or getting destroyed by something.
Right.
A lot of uncertainties out there.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen. Well, let's get back to your books and your writing. How did you decide that you were going to these are self-published books, right?
Yeah.
So how did you decide that you were going to do that? Because back in 2006, it was really a different business model than it is today. It's much easier to self-publish a book today than it would be back then. How did you decide to do that instead of going through a publisher?
Well, part of it was wanting to have full control over the book, whereas I know that, you know, or at least that was my assumption back then, that if I went through a publisher that I might lose some of the editorial aspects. Or I didn't want things. There's certain things I wanted to not be touched. And I was fortunate that there was kind of an up and coming, you know, small publisher in my area who was kind of getting going when I was getting going. And we basically teamed up and helped each other build each other's businesses. So I think I just got in at the right time. You know, years later now, I don't have hard copies of the books. Everything kind of going digital now.
Really?
I mean, it's 15 years after, right? You know, if I ever get to writing another book, I will have a print run, but it's like after 15 years, I don't know. I just kind of thought that if somebody wants it, the Kindles are so popular now that everyone wants to download things. Where I do like to have a physical book, but I think the world's changing, you know? So it's like to put up all the money to buy all this inventory.
Right.
For who, you know, most people are asked, well, do you have it digitally? Can I download it? This is before I did. So I just said, all right, that's what everybody wants. You know, it seems like 85%+ of the people want it digital. So it makes it a lot easier for me.
Yeah, man, that is, the world has changed so much like that. Like, I don't know. I like a physical book too. Cause you gave these when you were down, you gave me these signed by Ross right there. Look here. says right there, signed. So I got, this is like a collector's item then, because you don't even make them anymore, but I've got two copies of both of those books. And so the interesting thing is that one is completely dog-eared and torn up. And then I saved these other two. I just put them in the bookshelf, you know, after you gave them to me, and I don't really mess with those, but the other ones, I went through those so many times.
I like to do that with a book, especially a training book. It's not a novel. I want to go through and highlight it and, you know, put some notes. Maybe I'm going to change something in a routine and I can go back and reference it with a sticky note. Yeah. I like that for a training book.
That's what I do too. And then the way that you had it, not bound, but spiral bound, I thought was good too, because you could lay it flat, and then, you know, it's just kind of in the gym all the time. But if you had it to do over again today, writing those books, do you think you would choose a book format, or would you shoot videos, or what would you?
I don't know, because I've actually kind of been toying with the idea of maybe doing like Never Gyms too at some point. But I don't know that the world necessarily, you know, not the world, but if people want, you know, a 200 page book, or is it more convenient now to almost have some type of digital platform where there's demonstrations of the exercises, video and progressions, where sometimes some of the progressions might be a little bit more difficult to capture in paper form or book. Whereas if you have videos, it's a lot easier to explain certain things, and then maybe just have the routines either printed or available digitally. I'm not sure.
Maybe it's an app. You thought about an app?
I know.
You could do an app.
Yeah.
That'd be pretty cool. I was just looking at your book, going through it this morning, just like, you know, it's got all these nice pictures that, you know, are like, you know, each step of the exercise, and it's well done. But it's also in 2006, digital photography was nothing like it is today. Like what we're doing right now, I've got 1, 2, 3, 4 cameras going. We've got Skype going. I've got all this stuff, controlling it all on an iPad. It just seems like we've come so far, and it opens up the opportunity for different platforms. Like, I guess the app would be the most logical, I guess, for that platform for you. Because now you can third parties. What's that?
Oh, sorry. Cut you off. No, I've seen also things where there's, you know, like an online terminal almost, you know, where you could have, you know, say there's 100 videos of different exercises. I've never worked on creating an app, so I'm not sure, I'm not sure how it would all get pieced together. It's just kind of like in the back of my head here.
Well, I think now, just like kind of the evolution of the, you know, printing, publishing business, where it's really easy. I mean, you could probably Google how to publish a book and come up with 50 different sites where you just put in the manuscript and it formats it for you and does everything, and off you go. You could probably have it on Amazon in a day or so. The app building is like that. Like, we built some apps this year, and, you know, there's like some services where it's kind of like got a template and you just put it in there. And it's almost like Squarespace for building websites, compared to, you know, back in the day where you needed a coder and all this other stuff. Yeah. It's gotten a lot easier. I don't know. I think you would do really well with it.
I started my website with HTML. I wrote it in Notepad myself. I got, you know.
I know. Well, that was back. When did you start your website?
2001 was when it first went up as Ross Boxing, and then I kind of like I eventually branched out to Ross Training. But they both started in Notepad. I had the Dummy's Guide to Web Design, and I kind of taught myself how to put a website together.
And did you teach yourself how to code that forum? Whoops.
Yeah, for the most part, yeah. And the forum initially was on a different platform, Easy Board. I think the old Easy Boards. And initially, eventually, I switched over. I did have help. Some of the guys on the forum actually were techies, so I had I had some good helpers there. A couple of guys in Germany. Wow. I don't know if Lenny used to be. I forget what his name used to be on the forum. He used to be on there all the time.
Yeah, I used to go to the forum all the time. I mean, that was a. God, it was a great resource. And it was like social media before there was social media. Like if you were into training or whatever, you could meet these guys that were from Germany or anywhere, all over the world, and you're doing the same workout. And it was just really cool. I thought it was an awesome resource. I was sorry to see that it wasn't there, but I hope that you're going to revive it somehow. Because there's a community there.
Group on Facebook too, from because I have a large Facebook page to have a group where people could actively post themselves. And I don't know, I'm kind of just because I pulled the plug, it was only a couple weeks ago. So I'm almost regretting the decision, but I've got to just kind of see what's going on going forward. I just I don't have the manpower to keep an eye on the forum because you start getting, you could be gone for a week in the forum, gets spammed out and it's right. Like blown up. So
is that the way you run your business? You don't have anybody helping you with your business? And
it's me.
Yeah, really? Wow. Yeah. That's you've got a lot going on. I mean, that forum, the website, writing the books. How many books have you written?
Right now I have Never Gymless, Infinite Intensity, and Untapped Strength, which is predominantly grip, forearm, hands. Those are the three books. And there's still, I still have the old DVDs. They're still there at digital downloads. And prior to writing Never Gymless, I did have older books like 2002 or 2003 that I eventually discontinued where I wrote Never Gymless and Infinite Intensity, because they were Infinite Intensity, Never Gymless were somewhat revised versions of the real old stuff. That's, we're going back like 20 years now.
Yeah. Yeah, that's cool. So if you were to write another book, you think it's Never Gymless, kind of that training on your own, training anywhere, no equipment kind of deal?
Wow. Yeah, because I mean, I've got 15 more years of experience kind of doing that type of thing than I already did when I first wrote the book. So I was happy with Never Gymless, but I know for myself that I could make a lot better book if I was to start over from scratch. It's a big investment in time to try to sit down and create something, especially like if we're kind of traveling and getting ready for fights. So, I don't know when it would happen. I'd like to say I will eventually,
How would you do that? Like when you got a family, right?
Yeah.
So you got your family, you got your boxing business, you've got the other obligations of shipping and other things that you're doing out for your website probably. And then you're going to write a book and you've already done this three times. So where do you find that time?
I don't sleep a lot. something with a book, though, I always feel like it seems like a monumental task if you're just thinking about the end product. But if you wake up and say, all right, every day I'm going to wake up and put 60 or maybe 90 minutes, just turn off the phone and write, or maybe it's research or it's outline, and that's all you do. And after the first day, you probably don't have anything done. After the first week, you might hardly have anything done. But if you keep doing that, 60 minutes here, 60 minutes, 3 months down the line, it's like, okay, I actually have something in place that's getting me started. So it's just like, you can't do it if you're trying to do everything at once, where you can't just be singular and I'm just going to work on the book, because it'll take over you won't be able to do anything else. But right. If you have 60 minutes, you just say, I'm going all in for 60 minutes. And then hey, if I have more time later today, maybe I'll get back on. But as long as I get my 60 in, after a couple months, you got a lot done.
Yeah.
That's how I wrote the first books. Because I was busy then. It's just like I would block time out early in the day before I got distracted. and I made sure I put the work in, and then I went off and trained to do whatever else I had to do.
Right. And what about your own personal training? Where do you find time for your own training?
Well, I'm like, a lot of times when I'm in the boxing gym, I'm the coach, but I do a lot of stuff in the gym as well. But I have a garage gym here. I make time for it. I like for myself, just like working on a book, I like to train early in the day because, again, if I've already gotten it in, no matter what happens, if I have to put out fires, I get busy, whatever's going on, I already got the session. It's done. The day could happen now. Whereas if I put it off till later and I get busy, I'm not going to have the same focus I would have if I just got it out of the way early in the morning before I started the rest of my day.
Right. That's how I feel exactly. And it always seems like, you know, when my kids were little, there would always be something. I'd be like, I'm going to train, you know, at 5 o'clock this afternoon when I get off the water or whatever. And then there would always be a wrestling match or a soccer game or a parent conference or something. There was always something. And the next thing you know, you've missed three days and you feel bad and you're not at your best. And so I just moved to that morning thing. That's just the way. And then that's my time. You know, that's what I do. That's my time. And everybody knows that it doesn't matter anyway, because none of them are up. They're all sleeping. So it works perfect. But that's always been the best way.
You know, there's a lot of people say, like, well, I'm not a morning person. I don't know if anybody is, but it's a habit. Like, first you make your habits, then your habits make you. So, you know, when you start doing it consistently, it just becomes part of the routine. I don't even think about it. I could be half out of it, I barely slept, but I get to work. And then again, I just go on with the day.
Yeah. 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 I feel the same way. That's awesome. So one of the things that, I think that I was most interested in, like when I came across your material, your website, your forum and all of that, one of the things that I was most interested in was your mindset that you have. And I'm sure you're familiar with the book Mindset by Carol Dweck, but it's a growth mindset versus a fixed mindset. And you epitomize the growth mindset as much as anybody I've ever talked to, been around, read their material or anything. Where did you develop that? How did you develop that in your life?
I don't know. I mean, it's hard to say where, you know, I think we're all just kind of a product of our environments and, you know, the coaches I've had over the years and, you know, my own successes and failures, you know, aspirations to do more. You know, I don't think you could pinpoint a mindset on any single activity or experience. I think it's just an accumulation of just constantly trying to evolve and get better, you know, and I guess trying to take that then to my athlete, trying to help them evolve and get better.
Yeah.
Because like I'm saying, like, we can all do a little more, we can all do a little better, whatever it is, you know, whether it's writing or training or, you know, it doesn't matter what it is. We all have room for growth.
Yeah. But it seems like there's got to be some situation to where you kind of learn that. Like for me, it would be like there was plenty of failure, but then there was plenty of success, and there was some success in places that it looked like it wasn't going to happen. So like you just don't look like you have the potential to make it to this, whatever you want to do. Like you want to be you want to win that tournament. Man, those guys are so much better than you. You'll never make it that far. And then you do. And it's like, man, if I had listened to those other people, I'd be stuck believing that I can only make it so far. And, you know, I don't know if it's, do you think that it's more success or failure that helped you to create that mindset?
I think, you know, it's competitiveness, you know, where, and I think some of that might, maybe it's innate, I don't know, but I want to win, you know? And so it's not that, you know, if someone tells me I can't do something, you know, it's like, I might not say anything, but in my mind, I want to show them, I'll show you what I can do. And, you know, it's, you got to have not a cockiness, but a little bit of attitude, you know, you don't have to display it, but it's inside, believe in yourself. And you're going to show people I'm going to do it. You know, whether it's sports or business or school, I'm going to win. I'm going to come out on top. You know, I'm not going to like let someone else's opinion of what they think I can do dictate what I actually do, because everybody's got dream snatchers around them. You know, sometimes it's people that, you know, or friends or family, they don't want you to take the risk. You can't do it. You're not going to do this work. You know, I've always felt like if I put my mind to something, I'm going to get it done.
Yeah.
You know, and if I, you know, even if I fail, I probably did more than I would have done by just not trying at all. So it's like, I'm going to bet on myself because I'm competitive. You know, it doesn't matter if we're playing tic-tac-toe, thumb wrestle, I'm coming in. I think some people, they don't have that drive, that competitiveness where, I don't know, they give up on themselves and they're just not, you know, it's like, it's okay to lose or to fail, but you got to go for it. You got to try, you know, you got to bet on yourself.
So do you work with some young fighters that battle with those kind of demons? Like they don't really believe in themselves. And if so,
bunch of kids, baseball team. I mean, I've coached all ages. I mean, you're always going to have kids that, you know, whether it's their environment that they go back home to, maybe they're not getting any support. There's always going to be kids that are doubting themselves that, you know, they struggled maybe before, you know, and to be honest, not everybody is maybe blessed with what it takes to obviously to get to certain levels. And that, you know, that's just the reality, but everyone can get better. You know, you have to be, I think as a coach, you have to be a little realistic, especially in a sport like box where you can get someone's head punched. And, you know, there's going to be times where a certain fighter, it makes sense to hang the gloves up, or, you know, it makes sense to, hey, you know, maybe you should go play the piano. Okay. So you have to have a sense of realism, but you know, at the same time, you want them to do more than what they've done, you know, but again, boxing is a tricky thing because, you know, there are levels and, you know, it's like, I'm all for, you know, defying the odds, but at the same time, I'm probably not going to ever run 100 meters, in, you know, less than 10 seconds. Like I'm aware of that, you know? So I think you gotta be realistic in certain ways, but at the same time, you also gotta be willing to defy some odds. Just a balance there somewhere. I don't know how to, you know, I'm probably not describing it the best way.
No, I think you are. I think it's really good. When you get to the highest level, like the boxers that you're training, you know, like Olympic champions moving to the, like this female boxer that you're training with right now, what's her mindset like?
It's very similar, just in a sense, very competitive. You know, it's like, at everything, you know, whether it's the training, you know, it's like just, you know, when you have success, you know, and you've reached that level, you start to, you expect it, you demand it. You know, so every day you show up, it's like, well, Eric Thomas, you win the day, you know, win today's session, and then win the road work tonight, win everything. And then, you know, eventually that's just your mentality going in. You're on another level than everybody. It's not fun losing, you know, it's like, you know, it's not fun losing anything. So I think, you know, and again, but again, everyone's tasted that before, you know, and, you know, I don't care how good of an athlete you are at some point as an amateur, at some point you've lost, you know, and the really competitive people, you don't want to taste that again. You know, you'll do everything you can to avoid being there.
Right.
I have like, there's fights I lost 20 years ago, close decision that I thought, you know, it still bothers me, you know, so I don't think you ever get over it. But you do what you can to avoid being there in that situation again. That's for sure.
Right. In that book, Mindset, that I referenced, it's an interesting book because one of the things that she talks about in there are kids with a fixed mindset that, like you were talking about, athletes that have lost hundreds of times, and that creates kind of a risky, like you're not afraid to take risks. You've already lost. What's another loss going to be? What if I win? Like, think about how good it'll be if I win. So somebody that's lost a bunch, they have a tendency to take more risks, to go, you know, fight the best fighter in the gym or wrestle the best wrestler in the gym. So what if he beats me? I've already lost 100 times before. No big deal. Where a kid with a fixed mindset is like, they tell me that I'm the best. And if I wrestle that guy or if I fight that guy and get knocked out, then obviously I'm not going to be the best. So, she says, you know, takes it into a classroom setting of like, you know, they're afraid to take a hard test, or they're afraid to take a real hard class because everybody's told them they're smart their entire life. And they're afraid to take that risk because they're afraid they're going to get exposed. And that's a fixed mindset, where the growth mindset is whatever, man. You can't beat me any worse than the other guys already beat me, and I might win, you know, and I'm going to get better.
That, though, is that with certain individuals, as they lose, they can become accustomed to losing almost to the point where they expect it, and they stop expecting that they can win. They probably have more that they could give, but I've been here before. Here we go. I'm going to lose this one again. You know, it's like, so I think, but that's where the people around you, the support system you have, whether it's your friends, family, or coaches, they're the ones that kind of have to help lift you to let you know, listen, you can beat this guy. You know, you've lost before, but you can go get it. Because sometimes when you're on your own, you start this self-doubt creeps in, and it's just familiar territory. I lost the last one. Here we go. Yeah. I'm going to lose again.
Yeah, I see that, man. That's interesting that you bring that up, because that can, you can get in that familiar territory of just, you know, I don't have anything to lose, but I'm not going to win. You know, that's
like boxing. We call it like sparring partner syndrome. You know, it's like they're used to being the B side against the A class fighter. You know, it's like, and they get in there and they do enough and they compete, but They're the sparring partner. They're not the guy that's getting ready to go win. You know, they're just there to kind of fill their role. You know, which is a dangerous role to take, though. You know, especially in a sport like boxing, like if you're taking punishment, you know, you only should be there to win. You know, if you get to where you don't care about winning, you're in the wrong sport, and you can get hurt and affect the rest of your life.
Right. So if you take that kind of what we're discussing about, you know, the mindset and being in familiar territory of losing, and you take that into just a regular dude that's trying to get in shape, and like, how does that apply to somebody that is just trying to get in shape? Maybe the doctor told them that they're overweight and they really got to work on it. There would tend to be that same tendency of, well, I've always been overweight my whole life and this is where I am. And like, how does somebody turn that around?
I think at some point, I think they just need to see some progress, you know, because it's like, it's one thing for me to say, listen, you got to keep at it. You know, keep going, be consistent, bust your ass. But if they don't actually see anything, you know, the novelty wears off, you know, where it's like, I've been doing this. You know, I tried this diet, it didn't work. I tried this routine, it didn't work. I went to the gym, it didn't work. You know, where you have to, you got to give them something where they can see it. You know, it's like one thing for me to tell you, if you keep going, listen, wait till you see next month. But you know, until they actually see it and believe it, and that's where I think, especially if you're a coach, or you got to just kind of, you got to keep them uplifted and keep them moving forward until they do see it and believe it.
Right.
If they don't believe it, they're going to find something else to do or just give up on it.
Right. That's one of the things that I liked about a lot of your workouts and some CrossFit workouts and other things is like, there's a name to that workout. It's a very specific workout. Like say your Magic 50, like you're going to swing the dumbbell. You're going to snatch the dumbbell. You're going to do 10 burpees. You're going to do that 5 rounds and you mark that time down and you mark down, okay, it was with a 45-pound dumbbell. I did it in 12 minutes. And then you come back to that in 3 weeks after you've been working out or something. And now you do it in 10 minutes. And now, you know, you're like, huh. You know, did I get better? I mean, my pants fit the same. My shirt fits the same. I look the same in the mirror, but you know, I'm actually seeing progress. I think it's really important that people write it down or somehow monitor that progress.
Yeah. And it can be simple. It's like, you know, I ran a mile. Well, you know, you just ran it 10 seconds faster than last week, you know, like, the little steps forward, they all count, and they, you know, as time goes on, they all start to accumulate.
Yeah. And that's where they see the progress. But I think a lot of people get off track because they're not paying attention to those details. They just run a mile and they don't put a time on it at all. And they don't, I guess I might've felt a little better. They don't know they knocked off 45 seconds off their last mile. I mean, that's a lot better. Like
it's nice. Like data, you want hard data, you
know? Right.
So you look at your bank balance, you can see numbers, you know, you want to have something you can, you know, equate numbers to. I'm faster, you know, it's like, as you know, not just like what I weigh on the scale, we're talking like performance numbers. I just lifted 10 more pounds. I did 10 more reps. I ran it in 10 seconds fewer than before. So I don't think you should drive yourself crazy writing down every statistic in the world, but you got to have a track of something.
Yeah. Just something that's trackable. And a lot, you know, there's some types of workouts or some types of fitness programs that don't really have any way to track it. You go to the class and you do the class and yeah, I mean, how do you feel? Feel a little better than I did last week. And that's kind of the recipe in my mind of getting tired of it and not continuing, where if you can just see, like you say, like any sort of progress, anything, did you get stronger? Did you get faster? And then eventually you're going to see, oh, okay, well, my pants are looser.
So it gives you, like, we're talking about competitiveness. Like if I'm working against a number, I'm competing now with myself. So it's like, okay, I ran the mile this fast, I want to get a little faster. So it's like, when you have something to compete against yourself, I think it helps you. If you just show up and, okay, I'm at my spinning class, and I'm going to do the same half hour I did yesterday and the day before. I mean, what are you working against? It's the same thing.
Right. And there's, you know, you got a good opportunity to get tired of the spinning class. That's one of the things too that I always liked about of your books is the variety, and the variety really not necessarily because you necessarily need so much variety, but because you don't want to get tired of it, and you want to eliminate burnout or reduce burnout and keep everything fresh and do a lot of different things, you know, hit the bag, do pull-ups, push-ups, lift weights sometimes, whatever, you know? And I think that keeps it interesting too.
Because I think, you know, I mean, variety is another thing that, you know, you could be excessive, but sometimes, like I like to say, variety can be subtle, you know? So it's like, you might change your grip on the pull-up bar, maybe add weight, maybe do higher reps. Maybe, you know, you're doing close grip push-ups, you're doing wide push-ups, you're doing explosive push-ups, you're doing handstand push-ups. There's always a way to switch things up a little bit without straying too far from the fundamentals that you believe in.
Right.
You know, to repeatedly do the same thing over and over and over again. You know, it works for some, but most people, they need to have a little bit of variety and spice things up just to avoid the monotony and the boredom of just, you know, I enjoy working out. I like my time in the gym, but I understand that not everybody's going to feel the same way. They're doing it more for how they look, how they feel. Well, I actually enjoy the self. If I could do the same work, I'm going to be fine with it. But at the same time, I realize that it's probably not the norm. You got to, you know, it's nice to mix things up and keep people around.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, man, I think that, I think you ought to write another book or do an app or something. Yeah, at least get your forum back together. You got a big community of people out there that want to talk to you.
Yeah.
So if any of these guys want to, I know that you had a special where you were offering your book for $1 during this Corona.
Yeah, I have it up there.
You do? For Never Gymless?
Yeah, I'm just going to, as far long as this coronavirus thing goes on, I'm going to leave it at $1. So just to, I know people are out of work, and if somebody needs it, you know, it's a 230-page book. It's $1. So,
wow. And that'll be a digital download?
Digital, yeah. It's a PDF. So, you know, you can print it. I never created a full Kindle version because for me, you can read the PDFs on a Kindle, but I like the fact that you can actually print it. So, you know, for myself, I would print, say, like the workout section, so I have them on hand. I don't want to go reference something on a phone or on a Kindle if I'm training. I want to have a physical piece of paper.
Right. So you could get this book for $1. If you go, what's your website that you get it?
Yeah. Rostraining.com.
Rostraining.com. You can get Never Gymless for $1. It's and then print it out. That's what he's saying. And then you can just keep it.
Yeah. You can read it online on your computer, tablet, whatever. But you can't, you know, the options there are people.
That's cool. And then, man, I hope you start working on another book, because I'd love to see what you got going on. But man, it was great to catch up with you. I really, you know, just want to tell you, you have a tremendous impact on a lot of people. I hope you know that, including myself. You know, my story that I've told on the podcast before, but I was, you know, a wrestler. And that's how I grew up, not without much. We never went to the weight room. The weight room was for football players and basketball players. We weren't even really allowed in there. They didn't want the they didn't want us in there. We didn't know what we were doing, I guess. But we had just like, you know, some dumbbells, you know, a couple of bars and maybe a sandbag, and that was it, and each other. And so when we lifted weights, all the wrestlers lifted weights in the wrestling room. And we did things like burpees and squat thrust back then is what we called them. And, but that we weren't really allowed in the weight room. And if we went in the weight room, it was going to be back then, it was all bodybuilding, stuff. You know, you do three sets of eight and move on, and nobody in there is breaking a sweat whatsoever. So I learned, you know, my basis was basically what your books are. And then somewhere along the line, I got off track and forgot all that stuff and felt like, and then I kind of got out of shape, and then I got back in shape the way that I thought you would get back in shape. And the way I read and everything was you ran marathons. So I just started running, and it turned out to be fine for me. I just started running marathons, but I did that for about 5 years, and man, my back was hurting. I would just was over running marathons. So I was looking for another way to train. And I started looking around for jump rope workouts because I was traveling a lot at the time. And that's how I ran across your stuff was you had something about jump ropes. And so I started looking at it, and then I found all your website and everything and ordered your books. And I was like, this is like what we were doing in high school. Like, this is, I already know kind of this stuff. Like, and but it was like this justification, like, no, you already know, and you're right. You should be doing that stuff. Like, not that marathons are bad or anything like that, but for the fitness that you're looking for, you already know how to do it, right?
Yeah.
That was super cool, but I really liked it very much. And then it sent me down this road of you know, training every day, probably trained damn near every day since the last time we saw each other, and feel great, man. Just love it. I'm 52. Yeah. Yeah, we got a group that meets in my driveway every morning at 5:30. Well, it's kind of slimmed down now, but that's been a big part of just of my life, of just giving this information to those guys and having this social group around me that revolves around training, and it revolves around, you know, fellowship and training and, you know, mentally and physically. Like, it's a big part of my life.
Yeah, that's great. That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. But you know, a lot of that is thanks to you. So I wanted to definitely thank you for that. And, you know, you're humble, but, you're putting out some really incredible information. Two of the best training books I've ever read right there. You can get one of them for a dollar if you go to rosstraining.com. And check out his stuff, man. He's got some great social media, very motivational. I love the stuff that you do with the old training. Recently, you just did the stuff with Dan Gable and Kimura. Those are incredible videos. I mean, the martial arts video where they're doing 600 Hindu push-ups every day, and just the voiceover on that is so awesome. It's like, it's excessive. Well, yeah, we know it.
Roger, he's in the Olympics. Like, you wouldn't. He was a Canadian that went to train with Kimura. He won a silver medal in the Olympics.
Wow. Yeah.
And then he won the gold medals in the Pan Am Games twice. That the guy that he's the one speaking in that video.
So where did that video come from?
It's an old. I don't know. It's an old documentary that I had saved. I just spliced to try to fit it into a minute. I put up a link. Actually, there's a link on my blog to the, it's like an 18 minute documentary, but it's good stuff. Actually, it's worth looking at.
You tend to find a lot of those old training.
A lot of that stuff though, I found on the forum. Guys would share stuff on the forum and they'd send, "Hey man, check this out. Put this on the blog. You know, could you put this up for me?"
Right.
One of the equipment, like, "Hey, I just made this, you know, whatever. Can you throw that up on your blog for me?" Okay.
One of the things I remember, somebody posted on your blog were, remember those, that high school in California that had that incredible physical fitness, wasn't it in California? And they had like a documentary on that, and man, they used to train those kids during school, and they were jacked, man. Every one of them, man, you look and there's like 60 kids, and even the worst looking one is like jacked to today's, standards. And they're doing dips and rope climbs and pull-ups and every different kind of push-up you can imagine. And that was PE class. That's an awesome video, man. I love that video. That's so cool. But what I
like about that stuff, it's like a lot of people, I feel like today, we have this thought that we're the only ones, you know, that know what's going on. And if it's old, it's outdated, where it's like those guys 50 years ago are in better shape than 99% of the world now. Like,
yeah.
We come as far as we think. The stuff that worked then still works now.
Right. I mean, some people, there's definitely two extremes. Like, I feel like there are a lot of people that are in very, very, very good shape right now. And then there's a lot of people that are in very, very, very poor shape. And and then when you eliminate PE out of schools, and I mean, it's one thing when your PE class is like playing tag on the playground or something, but at least you're getting some physical activity compared to that documentary that we're talking about where that was like a gymnastics class. I mean, it was amazing what they were having those kids do. But I don't know. There's two spectrums. There's either just.
Yeah, I mean, there's extremes where you have like ultimate athletes. We have that now, obviously. It's just the middle ground, though, where the average person comes in. The average person doesn't do much of anything physical. Where I think in previous generations, that was different.
Yeah.
Whether it's like, we could probably all say, oh, my grandfather, you know, he could work outside all day. You know, it's like, well, you don't have that now. You know, a guy goes outside for 20 minutes, he can't do any labor. He can't do anything if he had to.
Right. That's a big change. And I mean, that's just a change in the world because I mean, the middle ground, a lot of those people actually did work like physical jobs that have been replaced with Walmarts and, you know, the farms have been kind of displaced in a lot of areas. And those people are now working at Walmart instead of tossing hay all day, you know,
it's all been automated, you know?
Yeah, well, even more automation with coronavirus, but I don't know. I kind of think that this I have an optimistic view on this coronavirus and the lockdown. I believe that right now I've seen more people, like if I do get out and drive around or we take a walk with my family or my wife, there are more people walking. There are more people, more kids on bicycles. I hadn't seen a kid ride a bicycle in 5 years. And there's a bunch of them. They found a old rusty bicycle in the garage somewhere and started riding it again. And I just think that people are spending more time with their families. I think people are more interested in their health. It starts with, you know, not getting sick and doing things like washing hands. But then I think every one of those little steps that you take leads to, oh, well, I could be better. I could be more fit. I could pay more attention to my sleep. I could pay more attention to my hygiene. I might do a push-up today. You know, I just kind of have an optimistic view on it. I think it's a good opportunity. It seems like a reset for the whole world.
That's a good way to put it, a reset. It is what it is.
Yeah. Well, hopefully it'll be over soon and then we'll go back to normal. But my hope is that going back to normal means that we remember some of these good things that come out of this, like spending more time with your family, exercising more, paying more attention to your health, and that kind of transcends into the new world, whatever that looks like as we're moving into it.
Yeah.
All right, man. Well, so the training camp, can you still train there at all? Or are you going to kind of shut down for a little bit or what?
It's no one else is there, obviously. So it's just us, but you know, we got to keep going until we hear otherwise. Right. I mean, right now the show's on, but I'm assuming it's going to get pushed back, but the last thing you want is to be caught off guard. So you gotta stay ready.
Yeah. That's in your book too. Stay ready. Not just get ready. Stay ready all the time.
Yeah.
That's good. That's a good philosophy for life though. All right, Ross, man, thanks for your time. I really appreciate it. It's great to catch up with you. I'll be watching for you online. Right. I hope you saw my tag to you the other day with my boy doing a triple clap push-up. That came from your book too. Yeah, he's a stud, like man. He's a stud. I got to try to keep up with him. I did a video of me doing a triple clap push-up, but it didn't go as well as his went. And so I deleted it. But I didn't smash my face. I didn't smash my face, but it was close. It was close. But I'm going to get it. I got to get good and warmed up before I can do a double clap, but not a triple. I'm working on that one.
Yay.
All right. Hey, we'll be watching for you online. Everybody, that's Ross Enamite, Ross Training, RossBoxing.com. Go check it out, man. Awesome resource. Ross, thanks, man. I hope you have a great day, and we'll see you soon.
All right. Sounds good. Take care, man.
See ya. All right. That was Ross Enamite. Ross, man, what a great dude. He's got some incredible information. He has, it's old school. It's simple. It's not complicated. And you can go, man, right now, that deal, Never Gymless for a dollar. Everybody should go get that book for a dollar. It is well worth a dollar. And, what I would do is I would get it printed out and have it spiral bound myself, because that book's amazing. It really is. It's this book right here, Never Gymless. And it's been a big help to me. It'll be a big help to you. And that $1 is awesome. As always, this podcast is brought to you by Waypoint TV. Waypoint TV is the place where you can go and see our show, as well as tons of other hunting and fishing shows. Waypoint is providing content to Samsung Plus TV. It has a Waypoint channel over there. Zumo, Stir, Pluto TV. There's all kinds of content on the free channels. Those Plus channels is what I call them. You can find the Waypoint channel, or you can watch it what I'm calling conventionally, which is kind of strange and ironic because it's not conventional at all. It's digital streaming. Go to waypointtv.com. Hit the Ways to Watch page. You can see how you can get it on all of your different devices, on your phone, Apple TV, Roku, Fire Stick, everything you can possibly imagine, as well as going to Samsung Plus and all of those other channels. So that's where you can see our brand new show. We just launched a new show with Derek DeYoung, a marine artist, and he is also having a special. If you're interested, you can go for 1 week only. You can go to his website and use the code SWE and get 20% off your order. So that's happening right now. And that's it for this week. So thanks so much to Ross. Thanks so much to you guys for listening. And we will see you again next week.